Hey, I'm Simon Wanji, and you guys are listening to The Center Ring.
Okay, so let's start.
Hello. Hello and welcome to another edition of The Center Ring, a.k.a. TCR, a.k.a. your favorite esports podcast. Episode 125, coming to you live, pre-recorded from an undisclosed location. The date, October 10th, 2018. The time, we'll say about 8 o'clock. Because we're having to pre-date this, because we have an interview, and so we pre-recorded that. Not like it matters, though, because this is all pre-recorded anyways, and we're professionals. This is going to be the best episode ever. Not only do we have Marco Suarez, esports strategist for OP Live, on the show, talking us about their future plans and their recent local event here in Dallas, Texas. There is a mix-up. Speaking of Dallas, Texas, this is a very Dallas-centric show this week. Not only do we have OP Live on, talking about them, we're going to talk some Optic Gaming and Infinite, the parent company of Optic. They are going through some restructure, so we will talk about their woes and how they are one of the first to really kind of experience that on that scale of an organization. So we'll talk about that. And Counter-Strike finally did something. Valve finally did something to mix it up. So we'll talk about that to start the show. But first, our social media. Follow us on Twitter at The Center Ring, our website, tcr.gg. That will have our Discord, our Twitter link. Twitch, YouTube, that's severely out of date. I'll get around to it. And that will all be there for you on our website. My name is Tim. Alongside me, we have Anuj, as always. Hello, sir.
How you doing, bud?
Doing good. And hello, Brett. How are you?
Hey, what's up, guys?
And that's the show. So let's get into this week, shall we? Because like I said, Valve has finally did something. And I'm not talking about adding in a useless revolver or a god-awful map. Well, they did add it, that, but they added a different god-awful map. They didn't lower the price of the Negev.
Which, who cares about that?
They still haven't adjusted it, though.
But who cares?
I know.
Nobody's busting it out.
It's the principle of it, okay? It's the principle that Valve tells you they're going to do something, and then it's just like 9 months later. It's like, whatever happened to that? Like, you could tell, though, that's how far the Negev is on their list of things we need to get to. There's no board meeting to balance out the Negev pricing. But no, so Valve did do a pretty significant update to Counter-Strike, one that will clearly affect the pro scene and the casual, but the pro scene is what's something that's interests us. Anuj, you're going to have to really explain to me the ins and outs, because it's dealing with the economy and win and loss bonuses, and I know you know that a lot more than I do.
Yeah, so I mean...
You are our IGL at DreamHack.
Well, that is true. We'll see how far that took us, though. Basically, what they did is they increased the count all the other games that matter too. Okay, Tim, how many games did we win prior to that 0-2? Technically,
we won 4,
at least
before
they restarted the tournament.
Before they had generator problems.
Then fatigue and jet lag kicked in and took us out of it. You know. So, anyways, what they did, this is a cool, really cool update. Like, so there's a handful of things that they added here. The most importantly is to the round loss bonus. What that means essentially is, in Counter-Strike, as teams lose rounds, they get more money than, again, the team that won the round. It's called the round loss bonus. It does that to handicap the game in a sense, to where money evens out and both teams are able to buy and keep economy somewhat consistent.
And if you lose multiple rounds in a row, the bigger the
you
bonus.
Get more money. The pot gets bigger up the
to
more you
like
continue.
4,500 whatever.
29 or 34, one of the two. It's like 2,900 or something. So what they did, or what the issue was, is they were basically noticing a trend, and it's been going on for a long time. If you lose the pistol rounds of the games, which happen twice a game, once at the beginning of the game and once at the restart at the halfway point, if your team loses that pistol round, you were generally going to lose at least the minimum first two rounds of each, or first two rounds of each game, potentially even the third, depending on what you did with your economy, if you save that second round or you bought and then saved. So what you would generally see is almost a swing of six rounds come off of those two pistol rounds. What they did here is they added additional money to the team that loses the round by $500. Now, you have to play Counter-Strike. It gets too complicated to then go into like how much that really gives you. But it does give an opportunity to essentially, if you're a terrorist, by potential having two AKs your first round or your second round in the game, and surrounding that with utility and pistols and whatnot. Mm-hmm. If you're counter-terrorist and you lose the first round, you can now do a full buy in round three if you do a full eco in round two. So if you lose that first round, don't buy anything round two. Round three, you will tend to have a better buy than the opposing team, depending on how many you killed, you know, in the previous round.
Well, and so it's also it swings assuming it. You lose the eco. I mean, I guess you would be able to buy a full one either way, but the point is the win and loss bonus doesn't reset until you win.
Yeah, until you win. Yeah, you would lose two rounds in a row. So essentially, you would go from like $1,900 on the first round loss bonus, and if you lose a second round, you get another $24. So it's a potential for a lot of money early in the game. There are ways to do a full or a buy with an op now on the third round. That really changes the dynamic. It doesn't give away as many rounds because of a pistol loss. Personally, I love it. There are a lot of people that do not. You've seen
What's
like Chris
argument
J come
to
out
that, though. Like, why wouldn't they like that? Apart from not liking change, because I agree. I think it puts more action in the game is what it does. So from a spectator view, you know, not even for someone who plays Counter-Strike, but just as a spectator, you're telling me I basically get a bonus two rounds a match to where someone is going a full buy or at least a not as soft eco?
I'm really happy about it personally. I think it's a good change for the game. The argument against it is it takes away the importance of the pistol round now. So the pistol round has just become, it could be a slight swing, but the maximum potential you can really get off of a pistol round is capitalizing with the opposing team that lost, like doing a full eco round two. So that means it's generally a really easy win for you in that second round. It eliminates really that third round of being an advantage. Now the losing team technically has an advantage going into the third round being their full gun round, right? So
right,
it in their mind they feel it can be a detriment to potentially winning that first round and going into the third round a week,
because effectively the way they changed this was essentially you're already starting with a one round loss bonus. And like, if let's say you buy in the second round, you know, you do like a, you know, maybe like CZ Tech 9 armor nades. In that third round, you're effectively getting like a fourth round loss bonus.
This guy was born and raised
so
in Texas.
You're do what?
Called it a CZ.
Or CZ.
You're
sorry.
From Dallas, sir.
I know. My bad.
Keep that Zed trash out of here.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, I mean, so even in the third round, if you buy in the second round, you're still going to have a somewhat decent possible buy in the third round if you go down two.
Yeah, yeah. If you go down two, you'll have a full buy in the third round now. So because you would, unless if oh, you're saying if you
upgrade armor, nades, and then do like Tech 9 CZ.
Well, it depends on if you're a terrorist, like you can get lost bonus with the bomb plant. You know, it depends on if you plant the bomb, then you might want to do a buy in that second round, because you can end up with like 4,300 round two, and that would be enough to do like full AKs. You can do like AKs on people, and have the other guys like back up two or three AK players with utility. That's probably what you'll see a lot
and
happen.
I could see too, like to their point, where say you won the pistol round. And then your team has to decide, okay, do we want, like, they're most likely going to do full eco because that gives them more money in the third. Do we go like a soft eco, assuming we're going to beat their hard eco? Because you don't want to win that first round and then all of a sudden lose, right? Because then you just ruined, with that first win, you ruined your loss round bonus. You just bought, you bought out on the second round because you won. Now you just screwed your economy where this team at least got one round of loss bonus.
Generally a full eco though, you'll never really see a team win that type of round. If a team is truly doing a full eco at the pro level, it's a 99% chance they're going to lose round two, right? So yeah, I get what you're saying. On the other end, do you want to invest? They probably, you will see them invest because that's like a gimme round that you need to get. And if you lose round three, at that point,
right? I was just kind of playing devil's advocate though to how you were saying where some pros are looking at it as like, well, it almost hurts us if we win, right? Because it could definitely backfire. But of course, I don't think anyone's going to complain that you take a round. Like, you're going to want to win a round.
All right, go ahead, Brett.
So originally I was on the front of, well, I don't really know if I like this because, you know, it takes away from that drama of, hey, you know, we just lost. Do we want to upgrade, you know, and just buy out? And then effectively, if we lose this, we're going to lose the third round anyways. Like it takes away that drama, that decision. But I'm kind of leaning more towards your thinking, Anuj, where I kind of like this because it adds, you know, and Tim just mentioned this, it adds that other cat and mouse deal. Like, okay, hey, let's do a soft buy here. We'll do UMPs. And then, you know, thinking that they're going to do a hard eco, and then they're playing the cat and mouse game where, no, we're going to buy two AKs, let's upgrade, and, you know, go for the win in this second round. And effectively, the other team's outgunned if they get picked early, right? So, yeah. I can see it.
A meta change is just good in general for CS, I think. Because the other thing they did is, and I want to throw this in there because I think it's super important, is they reduced the price of the SG and the AUG. The SG dropped to $27.50, and the AUG, I think, is $31.50 now, which
so
I know a lot of people
coming out of
joke.
Retirement.
Well, yeah, people joke about those guns, but like the SG has 100% armor pen, right? People didn't want to buy it because the cost of the gun. Like, it was a good gun, but it was like, oh, who wants to spend the extra like $300-$400 when a team like Astralis lives off of utility? They're not gonna put the investment in the gun like that. I honestly think you'll see those weapons come out for an additional $50 to have 100% armor pen, and it's a scoped rifle that these pros will learn the spray patterns quick, right? Like, these guys are really good at what they do. So I think you'll actually see those guns be viable for the first time. And Device jokingly tweeted about it. He was like, you know, I'm a Zoom player, so get ready for the SG and the AUG. See you boys in the server, you know. So I don't know if it'll become the gun, but I think you will actually see them in use. The CZ you will now see a little bit less. It did get nerfed. It's no longer like a one-shot headshot at close distance. So accuracy also resets slower on that gun now, and they buffed the Tech 9 again. So you're going to see some new changes in Counter-Strike, which I think will be good, fresh for the game. I know y'all were joking about it earlier. They did add a few new maps into the game. Austria is now in the competitive map pool. Canals, thank the Lord, has been taken out. Probably the worst map we've ever played. And then you saw Sub-Zero and Biome get entered into the casual map pool, but it's important because Sub-Zero is made by FM Pwn, who's also made maps like Cash and been involved in a handful of others. So you should hopefully see these games like, you know, I would love to see a new map or two added that we're not accustomed to seeing. I think it'd be fun. And this is a good step for Counter-Strike. They haven't done something like this in a long time. So ultimately, to change the meta up a little bit, I think will be exciting just for that reason.
Like I said, alone. I know I'm joking, but yes, any attempt at a new map with Counter-Strike is refreshing.
Yeah.
You bring back Anuja's favorite strat, Tech 9 Rush, dude, Waterfall Through Window.
Waterfall Tech 9, through Waterfall window. Through B. Waterfall Through B. I mean, at least we'll get that round loss bonus.
Quickly.
Lord knows that doesn't work.
Yeah.
So we've talked about it a lot on the show in the past. We always like supporting local esports scene, whether that be in our area, in Dallas, Fort Worth, or, you know, we've always said if you have something going on in your area to let us know, we'd be happy to promote it. After all, that's how esports got started, and that's how largely a lot of the smaller ones are still making their name for it. Not everything can be Dota or League of Legends or Counter-Strike. A couple episodes ago, we've been talking about an event here called OP Live. It was a first year that they did this, but they did it right here in Dallas, in Irving. And we thought, you know what? We always talk about these local events. We have no idea how they run, how they work. We need to get the word out for it for next year's. So we thought, what a better way to do it than going right to the source itself. So joining us right now, we have Marco Suarez. He is the marketing and esports strategist for OP Live. Hello, sir.
How's it going, Tim?
Pretty good. Now, I first want to ask you, esports strategist, is that just a fancy way of saying you're the only guy in the office who plays Fortnite?
Well, I actually don't play Fortnite, so that's not me.
You instantly became Tim's best friend.
Yeah, for real.
I'm more of a PUBG guy, but, you know, whatever floats your boat.
Oh, there you go.
No, you know, I work on partnerships within the esports industry, whether that's pro teams, streamers, or, you know, developers themselves.
So when it came to OP Live, first of all, the event was great. I know some of our listeners were there. They all said they loved it. It was, and Anuj and I said it on our show afterwards, you would not know that was like the first time event. Especially
much appreciated.
Like the stage and everything, right? Like it was done very well for a first time. And I know when we saw you there, I said, like, man, this is going great. And you kind of laughed and gave me a pat on the back. And I know there's always things that go on behind the scenes, but in your personal assessment, how did the event go as far as just operating smoothly?
You know, it's always hard to gauge an event when you're kind of in the middle of it. Mm-hmm. There's so many moving parts and you're always worried, you know, that one's going to fail and that's going to cause, you know, everything to kind of fail. But looking back on the event, everything went, you know, fantastic. Got a lot of great feedback from attendees. Everybody was really excited with what we managed to do. And that definitely reassures us that we're on the right track and that overall the event was a success.
No huge tech delays. You dealt with the unknown factor as well, where the thing that I loved about OP Live compared to other events is this was a very kind of homegrown grassroots feel to it, because on Saturday it was the Overwatch day of the event, and you guys, I think, don't quote me on this, but you might know more than me, hosted the first ever fully college Overwatch tournament on this type of scale. And I thought, first off, that was incredible to see how much the schools came out to support it. Was that something from the get-go that you guys were like, this is going to be our angle, is with the college esports scene?
You know, we wanted the event to be a comprehensive look at gaming as a whole. We didn't want to focus specifically on esports because there's just so much more that goes into it. You know, you have programmers like SMU Guildhall. You have amazing industry experts who really have these incredible stories that we want to present. But esports is definitely a big part of the gaming world. So we reached out to a lot of local partners, you know, from GameStop, who's headquartered here, to the Dallas Fuel. They recently moved into town, and we definitely wanted to keep the event local, try to reach out to as many either Dallas-based or Texas-based streamers and teams and colleges. And the Dallas Fuel was fantastic to work with. You know, they wanted to throw a college tournament, and it was amazing the amount of support we got from them and the responses we got from the schools. Everybody was super excited to see that the Fuel was partnering with us to throw this event. And we're definitely proud of how many teams we managed to come out. Huge shout out to them. They were great. And looking forward to the next one for sure.
I know SMU Guildhall, they're huge just in the, like you said, the video game sector, right? If anyone who doesn't, even if you're not in the Dallas area, I think they're, if you are ever interested in looking into getting into the industry, they're just a good follow on Twitter anyways. How did this start? Did they approach you? Because I know they were heavily involved. Their name was on a lot of posters there. So yep. How did OP Live start as a thought?
So, you know, one of the reasons why the event was so professionally done is we have a lot of experience in gaming events, but we've always kind of been behind the scenes, always handled the production, you know, designing stages and things like that. But we're never really out there to the public. And as we were doing our research for other jobs, you know, one of the things we wanted to do was to talk to local colleges and see, you know, what they think of the gaming industry. There's a lot of big schools here in the area that have great programs. And SMU Guildhall was one of the first schools we contacted. From there, you know, we talked to Mark Nasha over there, deputy director of the Guildhall. And the original idea was actually a small SMU Guildhall tournament. You know, we have a small stage in our office that we use to kind of show clients this is, you know, kind of the work we do. And Mark thought it would be perfect to host a little local tournament, you know, maybe 30 guys tops, and just have something that SMU could participate in. It was crazy how quickly that escalated.
You guys missed the mark on that. Missed the mark
just a little bit. Started 30 guys, and then we were like, hey, you know, let's reach out to some other partners, see what they see if they want to get involved. The response was tremendous. They were like, yes, absolutely. And that kind of just escalated and escalated until OP Live.
So is there plans then for, because I know we've already discussed it, that there's definitely plans of next year's OP Live event. It's going to be in Dallas. Are there plans then when you branch out? We're looking at, you know, maybe other cities in Texas, other states, maybe other nations, if you're ever planning to go international. Has this kind of encouraged you to try to always keep it to more of that local vibe with wherever you're at?
Definitely looking forward to next year. Dallas is a fantastic city. Esports here is, the community is just great. Don't want to exclude the possibility that we're going to take it elsewhere. There's a lot of great communities out there that are lacking in an esports event that's local to them. But we want to make sure that OP Live always keeps a community feel to it, whether that's here in Dallas, across the nation, or even abroad. We want to make sure that wherever we go, we, you know, don't disrupt the culture, don't want to bring something outside. We want to make sure it's community-based, homegrown, and keeps that same feel.
You know, one of my favorite parts of the event was actually in the Fortnite part of the tournament, where I thought it was awesome to get to see pro players play against, like, the average Joe, right? And so, how did that idea kind of come about? Because I don't think we've seen that, you know, really in any other, we've watched, I would say, thousands of tournaments at this point.
In a long time. Like, that's how the original tournaments used to be. You'd go to a tournament and anyone could sign up and you played against pros if you made it that far into the event.
Right.
And now esports has shifted to where you have to be a pro.
Well, you know, I think one of the great things about esports and the gaming industry is that anybody can play, right? And that's definitely something that we wanted to bring to OP Live. We were really grateful that we had some great pro teams willing to participate. CLG came out, Complexity, Team Envy. And we wanted this event to be, again, a whole look at the gaming industry. We wanted it to be something for everybody. And what better way to experience that than, instead of just watching these professional players, actually giving people the opportunity to play with them or play against them. And Fortnite was a perfect fit for that. You know, Fortnite is a great game that kind of tries to break the wheel they've done a lot of, you know, Marshmallow played with Ninja and trying to change it up. So Epic Games let us play Fortnite, and they encouraged us to think outside the box. And when we presented to them this idea where an attendee could try and eliminate a pro, they loved it. So we rolled with it.
And if memory serves me right, wasn't it just a regular old Joe Schmo who ended up winning Fortnite?
I wouldn't go that far. We had a stream team participate as well. Okay. Pink Meatball and Top Gun. Both of them are actually ranked really high in the Summer Skirmish. I think Top Gun actually made it to top 20. I want to think 17th or something.
Oh, okay. But so they're not.
Yeah.
They're not just any old player, but still, though, not, you know, I guess
one of the
sponsors.
Necessarily big recognized names like a Ninja. Or are they playing on any teams, or you said they're just a stream team?
I think Top Gun actually was just picked up by a team, but don't quote me on that. I will say one of the more interesting aspects was we had the OP Live Odyssey quest line throughout the event, and one of the achievements was to kill a pro player. I was amazed how many attendees actually managed to eliminate a pro player in Fortnite.
Awesome.
Yeah, I actually had quite a few, and I honestly... You know, when we were talking about these achievements, put it in there, and I was like, "This is not going to happen. Nobody's going to get it. That one's going to be the one."
You know, we talked to somebody there. It was a kid. Like I'm talking the kid had. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I know exactly who you're talking about.
I'm terrible with ages.
Like 12 years old.
I was going to say maybe 12 years old, but he was just some little kid, and he was like so excited. He actually talked to us about how I killed a pro, and you know, but it's, you know, it's I used my controller, and he was that was awesome to see that, and to think like I said, you don't get tournaments anymore where anyone can join to play a pro. And it's like, who knows? Maybe we're talking about that kid, you know, 6 years from now, and he's signed to a team playing professional over Fortnite. And you can look back at that weekend to think that's when it all started for him.
It really is genius, too, because like one of my favorite things to do is go to a state fair. And, you know, one of the first games I go and try to find is, you know, like the dunk booth. Like, I want to dunk this clown. And that's pretty much what it is, right? Like, it's people going to this dunk booth wanting to dunk on a pro. That is genius.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I will say that kid is my hero. I was watching him play some, and man, he is good. Like, I totally believe that he eliminated a pro just by watching him playing with the controller, no less. The kid was crushing it.
Yeah. No, he definitely killed a pro, because they walked past where we were, and we actually had a good conversation with him. So it was really cool to see.
He bought a whole gun from us, didn't they? Yeah. Parents bought him a souvenir from the event, and
so
they were just all excited.
Really
cool, so
it was cool to see how everything picked up from there. I did want to bring up one thing though, because we're kind of talking about, like, you know, the good vibes that for the most part I think everyone had at OP Live, and you said it earlier in our conversation that it was more than just esports, right? It was kind of and this is where I struggle. It's not a convention. It's not a tournament. What is it? It's an expo. What do you call it?
I mean, I call it OP
really,
Live.
I was going to say, because it really has a little bit of everything. You know, I think like of Comic-Con, right? Like you could go and buy retro games. You had artists there. It was like almost like a little craft show. You could buy retro games. You had, you know, the local Dallas Twitch community was there.
Yep.
It was really like it had everything. If you were into buying little exclusive things, or you know, things that you only find at these things, that had it there, so that you had the trade show aspect. You had speakers, which I love, from the industry. You had Jeff Moore, the president of Dallas Fuel Talk, and he's great to listen to. We've had him on the show before. But then you also had that tournament aspect. So it's really like it was a weekend for whatever you are into. You guys really kind of checked off the boxes. And like I said, for being your first event, was kind of, I don't know what I was expecting beforehand, but after I went, I was like, okay, that's not what I was expecting.
Well, definitely hope it was a pleasant surprise. We are really aware of just how diverse the gaming industry as a whole is. And a lot of times events kind of focus on, you know, one particular aspect of that industry. E3 is all about the developers, right? And up and coming games. DreamHack is really esports focused, and PAX is kind of more of a trade show feel, I guess. But we wanted to make this event be something for everybody. And we want to make future events be the same. You know, whether you're the veteran gamer who spends, you know, all his time playing the latest games, trying to get your rank up, to, you know, the mom and dad whose kid plays all these video games, but they just don't understand why he's so passionate about it.
It's showing the, if anything, it's showing the parents that it's not just wasting time, right? Even if they don't go pro, there is a community behind it. Let's use that little kid, right? I'm going to use him as the example again. No one saw him as like a 12-year-old kid and just thought, you know, what have you, right? Like if you're at a sporting event or something and you see a little kid, you just think it's a little kid. But it's like there, it's like he was able to have conversations with adults, with anyone about Fortnite. You know, we play together and everything there. So I think it's a good opportunity, like you said, to kind of showcase the best in just gaming, right? Not just esports or you know, one aspect. It's a showcase of everything, which is something I really do appreciate, and the fact that it's locally homegrown makes it all the better.
Is there anything, you know, just out of curiosity, because in our minds, like I said, we thought the event went so well. Is there anything you would want to change in the future or add on to it?
You know, the one thing that kind of sticks out to me that really threw us for a loop was actually the weather. That weekend, I mean, the rain was just pouring. And there was a thunderstorm the night before. So the Irving Convention Center actually lost power 8 times the night before.
Oh, gosh.
It really threw us for a loop in the morning because we had prepped all night, gotten all the systems set up, you know, internet connection, all the computers. Everything was in perfect condition, ready to go, ready to start the tournament as soon as the morning started. But we came in and half of the things had just kind of completely crashed. For a while there, we were only operating at half of our bandwidth because the other half couldn't start back up fast enough. We were really grateful to the Irving Convention Center and all our guys who, you know, found solutions, worked out the problems, got everything up and running relatively quickly. And, you know, from an attendee standpoint, I don't think a lot of people even noticed.
No, I didn't notice. It is funny how, you know, you go to these events, and we've been to a lot of events, and like at DreamHack Austin this last time, there were a plethora of issues, and it was all very noticeable, like power outages, internet outages, but it was all very like impactful to the event. But it's like here, I had no idea, like I didn't know there was anything going on, so. Either you guys just hit it really well, or you knew you had a plan B and it worked.
No, you know, these events are really tricky to pull off just because there's so many different things that could go wrong. Technology always has a funny way of failing you when you need it to work, you know? Whether it's trying to get the printer to print that one document you need right before the meeting, or, you know, trying to get your internet connection up and running right before you go into a
match.
Let
me tell you how many times I can record something throughout the week and it works perfectly. But before we go live for the show, everything decides to, like, my laptop all of a sudden it's to not work. And it's like, you worked all week. Why now?
That's how it goes.
Excellent. Well, Marcos, I did want to thank you again for coming on the show. Like I said, we loved the event. We can't wait to go see it next year. And like I said, if there's anything we can do on the show to help promote it, you know, we'll have you guys back on before the event next year, or anything that you have going on between now and then, just let us know. We'd love to have you back on, support that local growth.
Much appreciated, guys.
Let's give a shout out to the Twitter, though. It's at @OP_live_Dallas. So if you're a listener, especially in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, be sure and follow that. I'm sure you'll get all the latest for anything that they have planned for the scene, especially around Dallas coming up.
So, definitely.
Again, Marcos, I do thank you again, man. It was a pleasure, and we'll definitely have to get back with you soon.
Sounds good.
All right, moving on to the next topic here. I want to talk a little bit about this Infinite Optic layoff, financial woes that they're all of a sudden happening. To be honest, a couple days ago, I was going to throw this thing into E! News, and we were going to bring it up at the end of the show and be done with it. And then it was like just a little bit more. It was like an onion, right? Just a little layer kept getting pulled off. And then it got a little bit more interesting. So I thought, let's at least dedicate, you know, 5 or so minutes to this thing. So if you haven't been following, this all started with a tweet from Jason Lake on Monday, owner of Complexity, where he tweeted out saying, you know, it's going to be an interesting week for esports in Dallas. Best of luck to all those involved. Something along that line. And no one had any idea what he was talking about. No one. And then all of a sudden, he deleted the tweet, which instantly, like, yeah. Everyone's like, okay.
Yeah, we read it. It was like, those affected. It was like, affected? What?
What is? I thought there was an outbreak, dude. I thought somebody got sick. It was being passed along to the pro scene.
Rambo got sick and just started spreading.
Oh, Lord. I would have been there. I would have resuscitated him mouth to mouth, dude, if it was Rambo.
Bro, that guy has 0% body fat. That dude is not getting affected by anything. And so it finally kind of started trickling out with Infinite, who is the parent company who now owns Optic Gaming. I don't really know how all that works. That's corporate lingo and stuff over my pay grade. But they now own Optic and everything there. They own Houston Outlaws. And Kai Kai was let go, the coach for the Houston Outlaws. And he tweeted out just one of many from Infinite being let go. And that was the key word there, right? Let go. That's very different from being fired or anything like that. So then everyone kind of just thought, oh, all right, well, process of elimination. Nothing's going on at Complexity. Nothing's going on at Envy. It must be Optic then that's having this issue. And then throughout the week, they ended up, I think, what, 19 or 20 people were laid off from Optic.
I think 19's the number right now, yeah.
Including a co-founder and president, a lot of people from their stream team. Anuj, what was the guy's name?
Pajama or whatever. I don't know.
He's a big guy. Guys. I mean, I've seen him. I'm not
million plus followers. We say YouTubers, like the content creators, right?
Yeah, content creators. He's one of the OGs for Optic, and so they're letting go a bunch of people. This is looking at financial issues. Now, if you recall, like within the last 3 months, Infinite ended up breaking ties with one of their big investors, Deep Space Ventures. And I don't know, but if I had to assume, this plays a big part in what's going on now. And I will kind of say shame on people for trying to say, well, this wouldn't happen with old Optic, and this is Infinite's management, and it's poor management, blah, blah, blah. The reason they cut ties with Deep Space Venture is because one of the owners for that investment company was busted for domestic abuse after a Panic at the Disco concert was called by the wife. He was trying to beat her with a hammer. When police arrived, there was a hammer in the wall above the bed. So,
not a good look.
Infinite and Optic were like, yeah, we don't need that type of money. We're good. So they cut ties. The investment was done.
That's pretty badass. If that's how it all went down, like that's pretty awesome.
Like, that's my point here is, like,
because it kills the brand, right? It's like, I mean, they built up this
but they didn't have to do it. Nobody would have really known or like, you know, they could have gotten, they couldn't have gotten away and
built on people who were busted in CSGO skin betting scandals. So, I mean, look at all these people that are involved with something shady in esports. I don't think anyone would have either found out or cared about it, right? How many times do you know who's invested in these places anyways? Never. I think the only reason this was a big deal is because when they really, the news broke when they decided to cut ties with them, right?
And Optic's so damn big, you know, in general. So like people just know what's going on with, people are more interested.
But in I will sense. Say, good, if this is part of that, like if they're like, hey, we're not really financially where we thought we were going to be, and if it was partially because they cut ties, A, they know, right? They're smart businessmen. They knew that this was going to affect it, but good on them. I don't, you know, I'm not trying to pass blame on someone in the organization or mismanagement or anything like that. If that was the case, good on them. I would gladly be laid off if it meant that, you know, a brand that you cared passionately about decided to do the right thing. It's way different than mismanagement. With that being said, I think this is also going to be the first that we see this, but it won't be the last. When I think you're finally starting to see the wave of esports investments, right? A year or two ago, or really the last two or three years, I mean, you've been seeing it, investor after investor, this team getting a huge investor, these guys partnering with those guys, and maybe we overpredicted how fast that revenue was going to come back with esports, right? Everyone always says esports is a $1 billion industry, and I mean, sure, you could twist any numbers to look good, right? What do you think I tell people when we have listeners? You know, it's you
couple,
can
couple thousand, couple thousand, couple
hundreds of thousands,
hundreds of thousands.
And you know, you could twist numbers, right? So if you want to make the profit margins look big, that's fine. But in reality, we've talked to Mike Ruffell, owner of Envy and Dallas Fuel. Congratulations on the baby, by the way. We've talked to him on the show about it, right? When they pulled out of Counter-Strike. It's hard to be profitable.
Money is insane. I think Counter-Strike is like where you'll see this. Some of these salaries eventually get leveled out a little bit because they are insane. And you saw it with the fighting game community just recently. Echo Fox, I've followed somebody. I know we brought it up the other day when we were talking about it, so I went and looked into it more. And one of the guys that's big into the scene, I'm crazy forgetting his name right now. I should have jotted it down. But he posted a little video saying like, these guys are going to have a tough time getting half of what they were making going back into the scene right now. Like they're, if they're a big name, maybe half. If they're a medium to small size name, like probably a third of what they were getting on their next contract, because money is just crazy right now.
And part of me wonders, you know, with the Optic news, you know, back in November of 2017, they changed ownership, or they a big investor, you know, being the Texas Rangers ownership or owner of the Texas Rangers, came into play, you know, big boy money there. But, you know, maybe they came in. I mean, this guy is savvy. He's owned teams. He's ran the books. You know, he's managed an organization. And how much of this was, all right, guys, we need to get something together and just trim the fat, right? It's time to trim the fat.
Well, I mean, and look at some of these guys that they've laid off, right? Content creators, quote unquote.
Yeah,
that's your Twitch stream team, right? How many of these organizations have people where that's all they do? It's, you know, Cloud9 has them where it's just like, oh, here's a dude who plays this game and he's not on the pro team, but he's a streamer for them. So he has Cloud9 logos on his stream, or there's a, you know, an attractive female is a streamer for this organization. What is
we'll
she
call him Team Caliber?
What? Hey. Nah, man, we call those girlfriends. So I think what you're seeing now, though, is when it comes down to looking at the numbers and looking at the books, yeah, you are going to get business savvy men coming in here and going, why do we have this? I see that we're paying this person this much money, and yet they're not bringing in anything. I promise you, no one is going to that female Twitch streamer and going, dude, she's got a Team Caliber jersey on. I'm all of a sudden a Team Caliber fan. No, that's not how that works, right? No one looks at the cheerleaders and think, oh, man, that's a really good cheerleader. Now I'm a fan of the Cowboys. You know, that's not what makes you a fan. That's not what makes you buy a jersey. That's not how it works. So I think they're finally starting to see, like, there are a lot of just loose ends when it comes to money and not, like, they're putting so much in where there's just not a chance of getting it back. I was going to save it for E-News, but Anuj brought up Echo Fox dropping some big named people in the fighting game community. Echo Fox ended up dropping Punk, Scar, and Theo. Now, Punk, this year he's not that great, but last year he was a top 10 Street Fighter, winning DreamHack. He was an American, won E-League, I believe, and Evo. He won a lot of tournaments last year. This year, not so much. He's been struggling, but still, his name is recognizable. If you look at the other two, Scar and Theo, Scar is known in the Injustice community, the Mortal Kombat community. Those are dead games. Dead games. Yeah. They're not even played at Evo anymore. You know, that they don't play Mortal Kombat anymore.
It's
they
like
don't,
how much could be coming in off of that,
that's
honestly.
Exactly.
Like, where's the money coming from for a game like that?
So, like, a game like Injustice 2 or anything like that, when really the only tournament that's going to give its time of day is either the actual tournament ran by the developer, which isn't going to be anything huge, and maybe Evo that might pick it up for the second stage. What is that revenue coming from? Where is that return on investment by having them on your brand? I think esports, and for a lot of these organizations like Optic, we're moving past the point where you just want to get your name out there, right? Brand recognition. You're Optic Gaming. You don't really need that.
You're in everybody's list of esports organizations at this point. Envy's kind of leading the charge on this, though, right? I mean, you see Envy, we get to see it firsthand, but they're run like a true company. I mean, that's what their whole thing of moving to Dallas, getting the players to live locally. Like, they want this to be a company first, and I think that's the way it needs to be run. Like, it can't be run by kids. It's just getting the money is getting out of hand, and you see Envy hiring true professionals from, you know, again, we visited with many of them, but having them on the show, we know that they're hiring the right kind of people to run those organizations. I think Infinite is playing catch up in this case, is what it feels like.
I agree.
Yeah, playing catch up and maybe righting some wrongs, right? I think that they're looking at more so what happened prior to them owning and being like, okay, this is kind of wasted space as far as money goes. And I also bring up too, like, I am convinced, I am 100% convinced that organizations are getting paid to be a part of this league. But like, I see on Twitter all the time, Paladin, the Paladin Pro League. You cannot tell me that's making an organization money based off of viewership and fandom. That's got to be the developer paying the orgs to be in there. If it's not, that's like clearly one of those games where it's like, guys, we don't have to be involved with this game, you know? Yeah. But like, if you look, like, Paladins has to have like almost zero player base, if I had to imagine. And yet in the Paladins League, you have huge teams like NiP and Fnatic and
all the big boys.
Na'Vi, I think, they have all of them in there. So it's like, I think you're going to get to a point where it's like, okay, we don't have to be involved with every game anymore. Clash Royale, you know? Like,
I think everyone's feeling that out, you know, in the sense to see what that market will be like, just because it's shown to be huge for, first of all, for like Epic Games. So I see why people are touching on some of the new stuff, but yeah, there's a lot of games, I think, in the PC gaming world especially, that just automatically become an esport. Mobile is a little different world because right. people want to feel out what's there. But yeah, I mean, when it comes to PC gaming, any game that's released nowadays is marketed as an esports game. It's the next big thing. And we've seen it over and over and over again that it, you know, it's probably not profitable without seeing somebody's books. We can't tell you for sure, but it'd be hard to believe that.
Let me show you my Steam library and all the dead games in that.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't name you the amount of games that were like what's that early game access that
just came out.
Well, I mean,
the other battle royale game where that you had you have like battle, magical spells.
Battle right, Royale.
Is that what it was?
Yeah,
it was by a higher. Is that okay? That's the one that plays like a MOBA kind of.
Well, I don't know. There's like Paladins came out with one, right?
Yeah. There's another one that I'm thinking of that was popular on Twitch for like 3 weeks.
Well, and that's how they all work, right? Look at Islands of Nine. That was actually a very enjoyable game. We played more of that game early access. Then it was launched. It was popular for the first weekend. I tried playing that the other day. You can't. It doesn't exist. There's no player base. It just doesn't happen. So I think it's just... It's one of those things where it just doesn't work. So, I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But I think this is really the first step of what we'll probably see happen with a lot of different organizations. So, that's my 2 cents on it.
I agree with your 2 cents, Tim.
Thanks, man. Thanks. Let's get some e-news, shall we? What do we have going here? Lots of happenings going on in esports this week. You had the Big House 8 wrap up over the weekend, one of Smash's big premiere events a year, with a whopping $10,000 prize pool.
Ooh, man.
You think those pros are ready for Ultimate?
Yeah.
You think those pros are just like, please, God.
Dude, I haven't been this hyped for a game in a long time, though. I'm like, and I'm not even good at Smash. And I'm hyped right now.
I think it's going to happen. I think this is going to make it. It's Melee will always have its spot, but
what did you say the prize pool was?
It was like a little over 10,000 for singles.
Oh, good.
It was nothing. Like the winner,
was a little low this year.
So defeated Plup 3-1 in the finals, and he only got like a little over 4,000, 5,000 maybe. Mango ended up getting third. This was the first tournament with Armada not playing singles. He was still in doubles because he hasn't retired that, but he retired from singles for now. We'll see, though, because with Ultimate, you know, we're already seeing like E-League partnered up with them for a little special that they're going to do. Nickelodeon announced that they're sponsoring a Smash tournament with Esports Arena to help promote Ninja Turtles show, right? But the point is... you are already having more money involved with Smash Ultimate than has ever been involved with Melee sponsorship.
Any of the Melee pros trying to make a transition or?
They all will. They'll all try.
Yeah.
It's just some of them. I mean, Melee plays. The issue is like between Brawl and Smash U. The play styles are so different, right? With Smash Ultimate, they claim, Nintendo, that they built it to be competitive. They wanted it to be quick. They wanted it to be a skill curve to it, right? You can play casual, but if you're good, you're going to be good. Which is where it's Melee, right?
Yeah.
Melee was quick. The reaction times were fast and everything there.
And there's also a lot of ways to cheese the game in Melee that you're not able to do on any of the...
Well, cheese in the sense of, like, it takes skill to learn all the goofy juggling mechanics and throwing mechanics and edge guarding.
There's cheese in the other one, too, with Bayonetta. I mean,
yeah, it's just different, right?
Final.
It's different. It's kind of like back, if you think, like, in Halo, like backpack reloading, double melee, and all that, right? Those were all cheesing it, but you actually had to know how to do it, and it was a skill curve to it. So we'll see. I think a lot of them are. I mean, even Armada said he was like, "Yeah, I'm going to retire from Melee. Ultimate's open though, right? Like he might do Ultimate."
Okay, you're not going anywhere. We'll see you soon.
Just wait till you like Mango jokes about retiring. But
dude,
again,
I see Logitech give away more than $5,000 worth of stuff to a girlfriend streamer compared right. to what the Melee like is giving away for a tournament.
I mean, it's just it's gonna be interesting.
And we know Mango's not gonna retire. He needs beer money.
Truth.
Especially if the Eagles keep playing the way they do.
Yeah, I know, right?
we'll see. But I think you will. I think the money involved with Ultimate alone is going to be the killer for Melee. Like I said, you're going to get... The thing is for new players, what are you going to play? Melee or Ultimate with a bigger prize pool? Newer game with a bigger prize pool. Older game where, like, Godspeed if you plan on cracking the top 10, because that's pretty much set.
Yeah, it's like no, I'm a purist. They say the prize pool. Oh, you know what?
Yeah,
never
look
mind.
At Fortnite,
oh,
right? No. Fortnite announced their prize money, and everyone was like, "Oh, okay, like bye,
bye, PUBG."
In other news, we got CS:GO. Everyone on G2 ended up signing a new contract with the organization, apart from Kenny S. Have we heard anything else on that? That's the last I heard.
His contract expires in February. I think he's smart because he knows what happens with Team Vitality, which is the new French CSGO team with Apex, NBK, RPK. That's a lot of PKs, BKs, all mixed into one over there, Zywoo. So I think he's going to wait and see how this kind of plays out. And it's probably a smart move because he could go play for an international roster. I don't think G2 is going anywhere. So with Smits on that team, he's never going to be at a level that you need him to be at, especially if he's not your IGL. I think he's just playing. I think he's playing the slow play here. No need to sign because he's going to get paid either way when his contract is up.
You did mention Vitality in there. They are entering in. It's been rumored for a long time that they were going to sign a French roster. So you got NBK, Apex, Happy, RPK, Zywoo, like you mentioned. I was going to come on and say we were going to do like a French segment. I wanted to talk about French CSGO again, saying that I think maybe the best thing for them is to stop being French CSGO and just break out of the scene, right? Like how many times are you going to see these same players recycled? But Zywoo was supposed to be like the French prodigy, so I've read that he is supposed to be the difference maker on that roster.
He's very good.
Yeah. So we'll see. Maybe that's what the French scene needs, right? That young... They need a French Simple or a French Stewie 2K. And then they'll leave that team and join a bigger org later on. It'd be just as bad like Stewie.
Lord. Stewie, we love you.
And Overwatch.
On the show.
Overwatch League announced a little bit more for the upcoming season. It will start Thursday, February 14th. A little later than what last year's was. I think last year started January, like the second week of January. So it's about a month behind. You will see a more flexible schedule, though. A lot of teams, a lot of players complained about fatigue in Season 1, saying, like, we're just playing way too much. Like, between practice and a game, it's just ridiculous. So they are spacing it out where some weeks you won't play at all. You'll have a bye week. Some weeks you'll play one match. Some weeks you'll play two. That's allowing teams more time to chill.
And I'm good with that if it improves the quality of matches.
Yeah. Well, and I think what they never thought, right, is like, oh, these guys, it's all based in LA, right? There's no travel or anything like that. I think what you're also, they forgot, though, is like a lot of these guys aren't from LA, let alone America. And it's like kind of like, you know, when you're on vacation at the end, there's no place like home. It's like these guys are basically sleeping in and out of an apartment, which to them feels like a hotel for a majority of the year. So you get fatigued a lot quicker. And also to help break it up, they're doing the All-Star game in the middle of the season in between stages 2 and 3 this year rather than at the very end. So that's
like
going to also break up. They're going to stretch that out, give them a little bit longer than last year for a mid-season break.
Yeah, I mean, I like it. It keeps the All-Star game fresh because it is mid-season. I could care less about the All-Star game when it was like after the finals, right?
Yeah, you're done, right?
It's like it's over. I'm fatigued. It's like it's a Super Bowl.
I don't care about. It's done. It's done. Yeah. The season's done. I moved on. Also, in Overwatch League, they did end up letting go most of their observing team. Alchemist, who's a friend of the show, being one of them. He was the lead observer, as they called him. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. The World Cup coming up in about a month at BlizzCon will be the first time we get to see how they change the production. So we'll see. It's never fun to see friends being let go, but it is what it is. That's the nature of the business, right?
And we know he's one of the best in the biz, so he will be
he'll going get picked again up. Real I'm soon. Not worried about real it. Soon. Yeah. I offered him a job at TCR. I was like, $5 flat, take it or leave it. And I will not go a penny lower, sir. All right? There's no friend discount here. I'm paying you top dollar of what we can afford. Speaking of Alchemist, he is going to be joining us soon. Maybe next week? Maybe in a future episode, but he'll talk esports. He is a veteran in the scene. He's been around for a long time. He's an old guy, older than Brett, which we can't really say a whole lot of times on this show.
Yes, he is. My people.
He is. So that does it for E News, and that about does it for the episode of the Center Ring, aka TCR, aka your favorite esports podcast. Episode 125 is in the books. I thank you for listening. Whether you listened to the whole thing or you skipped around, I appreciate you all the same. I want to thank Marco Suarez again, the esports strategist for OP Live, for coming on the show, talking some local esports. Again, if you do local esports, it doesn't have to be in Dallas or Fort Worth for us to care. Let us know. We'd love to get the word out. We'd love to have you on the show. Talk about it. That's
especially if you send us free stuff.
Oh, if you send us free stuff.
T-shirts.
Man, we'll start the show with the interview.
240 hertz monitors, anything, something small.
New 2080
Ti? Yeah.
We'll see. You can follow us on Twitter at The Center Ring. Get all the show updates. Know when we go live on Twitch. When YouTube is finally updated. All that fun stuff. Our website, tcr.gg. Again, next week, we may have Alchemist on the show. We may not. I'll have to touch base with him. But for Anuj, for Brett, this is Tim. We'll see you next time.